Hello and welcome to the NBA Outlet presented by OGGBasketball.com. I'm your host, Nick Fay. With me, as always, Corey Waldron and two guests today, Jack Manuel and special guest Justin Hodges, assistant editor of Sea of Blue, also a Hawks writer. What's up, guys?
Hey, guys. How are you doing? You can find me on Twitter at HodgePodShoops. It's my main outlet to find all of my writing. I'm excited to come here and talk Hawks with y'all today.
Get into those DMs. Slot in, ladies and gents.
Feeling this one's going to be hot and spicy.
All right, and what we're doing today, we're starting off the NBA Outlet Preview Series. Our first team is going to be Atlanta Hawks. Before we get started, though, just a quick reminder, you can check out the show, all the previews, iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, Dash Radio, Google Play. But before we talk about the Hawks this upcoming season, we're going to look at last season. Obviously, 24-58, last in the East, a tanking type season, you know, not a great offense, not a great defense. What were your thoughts on the Hawks last season?
You know, it was the first really bad season. Obviously, they were a team that made the playoffs for a decade in consecutive years. You know, they shipped out all the assets, so it was ugly for a good part of the season. There was a lack of young talent, but there were some high spots. There were some obvious low spots. Not a lost season. It was the first step in a building ground towards progressing something that's going to be a lot better. Bringing in Travis Schlenk, the general manager from the Golden State Warriors, was a very good move. He's a smart guy. He made the moves. He's made some questionable moves in essence, but moves that he knows are well thought out and moves that will make this team better years down the road. And so, really, even though it was ugly last year, it was something that was necessary to progress onward.
Yeah, piggybacking on what Justin said, I was literally probably going to say half the stuff that he said there. You know, they've probably been one of the more successful franchises, especially out East for the past decade, maybe decade and a half. You know, the Budenholzer was fired postseason. Lloyd Pierce, who a former 76ers assistant, Lloyd Pierce is hired. I think if you're looking at it from a perspective of a win season and from what the Atlanta Hawks have produced in previous seasons, it's completely a lost season for fans. But at the same time, like Justin was saying, this is the first step in the rebuilding process. Travis Schlenk made mostly good moves, some questionable moves that we'll talk about, obviously. This was probably his sort of first step in making his mark on the franchise and as they go forward. But, you know, I don't mind what they're doing. You know, they're one of the sort of teams that last year, they still had their moments. And, you know, when you have a Coach Bud style team, you're generally going to get a hard night in, night out, a team giving their all. But, yeah, it was certainly one of the least sort of watch teams, least entertaining teams for me personally.
Yeah, I mean, this team was a dumpster fire at many points in the season last year. There were enjoyable moments. I think like John Collins, he was impressive as a rookie. Taurean Prince had some nice moments. But we kind of knew what this team was going forward, looking towards, which was tanking. So I'm not overly surprised. As you guys both mentioned, I mean, this team was really good a few years ago when they had, you know, the Paul Millsap, Al Horford, Kyle Korver, and Jeff Teague kind of forefront.
DeMar Carroll, my God, don't leave
DeMar Carroll as well. My fault on the young Dennis Schroeder. But now we're transitioning to a point of rebuild, which I'm sure we're going to go into further in depth.
Yeah, you guys pretty much nailed it. You know, the Hawks, obviously, you know, when a team buys out their vets around, you know, the trade deadline of Marco Bellinelli or Ersan Ilyasova, kind of sends a message you're going to tank, a lot of losing. But talking about positive things, what was the highlight of the Hawks last season? It could be a player, a certain style of their play, a coach. What was the highlight of last season?
It was definitely John Collins. The value, what they got from him, being him with the 19th pick in the draft, what he's able to do, you know, advanced stats, really loved him. Even if his points per game or really like any of his base averages seemed a bit lower, not as exciting or impressive. When he was on the floor, he made a great impact. And just to be able to get a steal like that, without even with a fringe top 20 pick, it was a really good thing for the Hawks. It was a really big positive just because, you know, in terms of how the team was constructed last year, that was the main bright spot, along with him and Taurean Prince. But yeah, definitely John Collins, the biggest bright spot, because this is a guy, and if you watch him in the summer league, just how much he's improved, you can tell this guy is going to be an extremely good player for many years down the road, hopefully those years with the Hawks. And it's just exciting because, you know, he is really the way he can grow is a really prototypical build for a bit, because he has the athleticism, he has really wing style capabilities with his ability to attack face up, and he's a growing guy, growing jump shots. You know, he's expanding it to the 3-point line, as you could see in summer league. So definitely, of all the things that happened last year, of the few good things that happened last year, John Collins was definitely the top.
Well, come on, Justin. December 23, the Dallas Mavericks, Migos, Gucci Mane, and Lil Yachty are sitting courtside. How is that not a highlight? But in terms of John Collins, I think for me, you know, I'm going to piggyback and give you like all rookie second team. He was 7th in the league in field goal percentage, 10th in effective field goal percentage, and 8th in the league in offensive rebound percentage. Those are elite numbers for a rookie, for any player, let alone a rookie. You know, all the things that you said, you know, were awesome. I know Nick and I were a little bit salty that our boy Jared Allen didn't make it, but I think he was certainly well-deserving, John Collins, to make one of the rookie teams. And yeah, Taurean Prince showed some nice offensive strides. I think his defense has a little work going forward, but he did play all 82 games, one of the few players to do so. So he certainly was a consistent piece throughout the year. But yeah, they also had a couple of nice wins, you know, against the Pelicans, the Spurs, the Wizards, and the Celtics later in the year. But, you know, other than that, there were few and far between, I guess.
Yeah, I think for me, kind of what you guys have said, is John Collins. He's probably the highlight. Obviously, when you're starting a rebuild off, he was the first kind of younger piece of this puzzle going forward. He showed signs that he can be around here long term. I think Prince has made a decent case for himself. Obviously, we know Schroeder's gone. But I think Prince and Collins, for them, it was kind of just their performances to kind of prove that they can be on this team going forward. And then I think Kent Bazemore kind of upped his value slightly, even though his contract's pretty bad for a guy like him to be kind of moved.
Yeah, I'm agreeing with John Collins. I thought he had a really impressive season, something for Hawks fan to be excited about. Moving forward, you know, you have a starter for the next 10 years, super athletic with developing skill set. You know, you can't really ask for more, like Justin said, of that 19th pick. But going to the negative side, what was the most disappointing thing of the Hawks season?
The lack of development from Dennis Schroeder at the point guard spot. Going into the season, he really needed to improve in several areas, primarily being an effective defender and upping his efficiency. He was a guy that was always touted as a good scorer, but would he be able to be efficient enough from the outside or efficient enough in general to sustain himself as a starting point guard? And last year proved that he really wasn't able to do so. And if he had been he was thrown into a lousy situation, admittedly, when he first became a starter. There are some things he couldn't control, but in terms of just, you know, his effectiveness and his efficiency as a player, just was not much improvement from the first year as a starter to the second year as a starter. And if, you know, he had improved in those areas and had been able to sustain himself, it could have led the Hawks to make some better moves than the ones they made to really fill out their roster, instead of picking Trae Young to sort of replace him a month before they wound up replacing him, and that was replacing him for a first round pick by taking on Melo's contract. So definitely not getting as much from Schroeder as, you know, they had hoped when they signed him to that 4-year contract was probably the most disappointing thing of last year.
Yeah, piggybacking off the Schroeder thing, Justin, he actually ranked 6th in the NBA creating, assisting, or scoring 17.2 points per game out of the pick and roll. So he had moments and he had areas that I think he was quite good at that were overlooked. But I think overall, and also he was, I believe, 2nd in percentage in plays run on isolation, only behind James Harden. So we know his sort of skill set. We know what he's good at. But outside of those sort of maybe two areas, scoring, essentially, you know, he was certainly a bit of a sieve. But for me, though, I'm going to go a bit broader. The Atlanta Hawks were quite clearly the lowest attendance team in the NBA. You know, our Nets, I can't probably talk too highly because the Nets weren't far behind, but they averaged only just over 14,000 attendees per game. I've seen in recent days, in recent weeks, that they're changing concession prices. I mean, if I was living in Atlanta, I'd make the most of that because I think, you know, there's, you know, times you might see Quavo and take off there. And I think that, I wouldn't mind seeing the progression of Trae Young, Kevin Huerter, who we'll talk about, all these guys, as well as John Collins. I think that, you know, that should grow. And I think maybe as well, low-key, we'll talk about Jeremy Lin, but that sort of injection might give them some new life in terms of bringing in a new fan base. But yeah, for me, it was the fact that there was just no attention on them. They were almost an afterthought when it came to sort of NBA storylines.
Well, so last year, Justin, on this preview pod, I predicted the Hawks to win 19 games.
Yikes.
So I'm disappointed that I was wrong and the Hawks won more than 19 games.
Credit, that was only because of Mike Budenholzer.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Put in Jason Kidd in that, you get like 15 games.
Yeah, right. Well below the 19 mark. So I guess kind of what you guys have said, I think Schroeder was obviously in a shitty situation. I mean, the team around him, you can't really expect much from the guy, but he didn't elevate that team any further. I guess for me, it's a mixture of just having some guys who you were kind of – I mean, they got rid of Jeff Teague in hopes Dennis Schroeder was going to be the next guy, and obviously, as we know, that's not going to be the case. So I think that's probably the most disappointing thing for me as well, is just the fact that they had kind of pushed the team in the direction behind Schroeder, and obviously they had to change plans, but it wasn't – obviously it wasn't that hard to move them and get rid of them.
Yeah, and on the Schroeder front as well, I think there was definitely attitude and locker room concerns for him, you know, kind of influencing the younger guys.
He's got off-the-court stuff, right? He's got a domestic charge or whatever.
He got a felony assault charge living on his head. It's been on him for about a year now. And that was really one of the main things that held back his value when it came to trading him and why it took so long to trade him, because along with everything else we've said, he had that looming over his head, and we really don't know what that's going to end up being for him, or if he's going to end up really suffering much for it. But yeah, it's definitely a little off the court stuff, and you know, there was really no solidarity towards locker room issues, if there were or weren't. He's never seemed to be a guy to have really bad personality when it came to teammates and stuff like that, but definitely could have been.
Yeah, and I think, you know, when you're doing a young team, you're trying to build up the culture and you bring in a new GM, new head coach, you just want everything to be kind of smooth. Also, I guess maybe somewhat disappointing, not really on the big front. I mean, maybe they could have got a second-round pick for Bellinelli or Ersan Ilyasova. Buying them out, obviously, a rebuilding team can always use picks. But moving on from last season, talking about this year, obviously this is a rankings. Our writers at OTG came up with these rankings. All put their votes in. Hawks are our first team, so they're coming at number 30. Do you guys agree with the Hawks being ranked the 30th team in the NBA?
I definitely don't disagree with it. They're still pretty far behind in terms of talent standpoint, really with the league having the surplus of talent as it doesn't have now. Really, all the teams in front of them, you know, have, you know, solid foundations, great foundations, and talent that's going to, you know, lead to, you know, at least a decent amount of wins, or, you know, more wins than the Hawks are expected to, you know, have. And especially if Kent Bazemore winds up getting traded in the coming weeks, I don't mind the Hawks being last in the NBA.
Yeah, I'm completely on board with this. I absolutely agree. It was almost near consensus that the OTG writers had them as their 30th ranked team. We were talking a little bit, you know, before the pod about the fact that, you know, the Hawks are one of the few teams that from the outset, their goals are to tank. They don't want to be good. They want to stockpile their assets, rebuild a culture, rebuild their assets, rebuild their talent, you know, stockpile all their pieces and such. So for me, that has to make them one of the worst teams, because all the other teams are at least going to go out and try and win. You know, Lloyd Pierce maybe looking to try and sort of make an impact, but I think his more impact will be on the player development side, you know, similar to, say, you know, a coach Kenny Atkinson, and a lot of these new coaches who are sort of in the player development. Well, what can he get out of Trae Young? What can he get out of Kevin Huerter? What can he take John Collins games to? But yeah, I completely agree with this. I think our writers are on point.
Yeah, I think 30 spot on. I think without question, this team is in the bottom five, and then the bottom three feels strong. And then lastly, you know, you can make the argument maybe the Kings are worse because they have some weird positional fillings of how many bigs they have on that roster. But I think the Hawks take the cake for being the worst team currently, and I think 30 is pretty fair. I mean, who knows? You know, if certain rookies like Trae Young come out explosive and guys like John Collins, you know, develop for this team, may jump, you know, one or two spots. But I think 30 to start is really fair.
I think Jack was pretty spot on. The fact that we know the Hawks are tanking, I think 30 makes the most sense. For these other teams around the league, you're not really sure if they want to go full-out tank or they're trying to compete. In a team like the Kings, they don't have their pick next year, so they're more likely to try to win games. So we would all say a fair ranking for the Hawks, right?
Yeah. Would you – I'll put it to you guys. if you were given $100 to place a bet, would you place that bet on the Warriors winning the championship or the Hawks finishing with the 30th seed, the worst record in the NBA? What do you think is more likely? What would you bet your money on?
The Warriors.
Yeah, Warriors easily. I don't think I want to go against that.
Not that I don't disagree the notion that the Hawks could finish 30th. It's just really like you were saying, you know, there is a chance that they could move up one or two spots. I do think at least their starting lineup is decently constructed to where they could steal a few games, especially how they're built to really be a 3-point shooting team. They could probably steal a few games, you know, here or there that they maybe were not supposed to win. And so maybe, like I said, maybe the Kings, the Magic, or one of those bottom-dwelling teams could possibly fall under, and it's the Warriors. Until Kevin Durant leaves, and even after that, I mean, even with how great the West is, it's just not happening.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I think the fact is, like, you even could say maybe the Warriors get an injury, somebody's out for the season. Most of us would still predict them to win it all. And then one of the bottom five teams that are, you know, just above the Hawks, they get an injury, they'll probably fall underneath them. So I think the Warriors are more of a lock.
Yeah, I'm a little higher on the Celtics. I don't know why. I think that this one's a little bit tougher than you guys were sort of saying, but I think it is probably, I'd lean towards the Warriors sort of scenario as well. But, you know, I wouldn't sleep on the Celtics. I think that, you know, out east, I think that they have the potential to be the highest winning team, and we'll talk about them in preview pods as well. But yeah, I think, you know, that because there's a lot more variance, like you guys were saying, with teams like the Magic, the Kings, the Bulls even, other teams around that mark, the Suns. So yeah, I think whereas the Warriors are sort of, you know, almost in a league of their own.
Yeah. Moving on from there, we're going to talk about new additions. First, we'll start with the new head coach, Lloyd Pierce. He's been coaching the NBA since 2007. You know, he's been known for player development, as Jack mentioned. He's been somewhat mentioned as similar to Kenny Atkinson. What were your thoughts on the Lloyd Pierce hiring?
I thought it was a fantastic hire. Like you said, he is a full-on developmental coach, and you saw what he was able to do with Philadelphia with the young guys they have. He's a well-respected coach from what I've seen in the NBA community. LeBron James has given him props in years past. Several other well-respected people have given Lloyd Pierce their props. I think he's going to fit in really well with what Atlanta's trying to build. This is a guy that Travis Schlenk obviously likes because he's basically the one that handpicked him when they were looking for a head coach. So I really like what he's going to do here. In terms of system and style and all that, it's yet to be seen yet. We probably won't see until these guys start playing. But, I mean, he's a good person. I think he's going to be a hell of a coach when he gets here, when he starts getting this thing rolling.
Yeah, I think Travis Schlenk, and this is a quote I found from him, it was critically important to find a dynamic teacher who could connect with and develop our young core while instilling the culture and high standards we feel are necessary in a successful program. All those buzzwords you want to hear are the perfect things that I think that, like you were sort of saying, Justin, Lloyd Pierce ticks all those boxes. He's on a nice cheap deal, which I think that ownership will be happy about. You know, 3 years, an option for a fourth as well. So, you know, I think that going forward, I think Lloyd Pierce is going to be, you know, the right guy. And I think that, you know, we could see him, you know, get some buzz in a similar way that Coach Kenny did. If we see some sort of strides made by guys like Spellman and Collins and, you know, Prince and all the other sort of picks and young guys that they've got. So, yeah, I really like the hire.
I'm going to piggyback on what you guys said, but him being a player development kind of specialist throughout his time in the NBA, obviously he's been with the process and with Philly. That's what he did in his time with the Memphis Grizzlies and as well as the Cleveland Cavaliers. So for a team that's young and a team that's rebuilding, this is the kind of – like, will he be there long-term when this team finally has, you know, a core established and they're trying to actually win? I mean, obviously a lot has to happen before then. But for the foreseeable future, this is definitely going to be their guy.
Yeah. Anytime you have a rebuild, you bring in a player development type guy, it's going to help the young pieces, which we're going to talk about right now. Starting off with the draft picks, obviously Trae Young, fifth pick with the trade with Luka Doncic, who will always be kind of tied to him. He obviously has some boom or bust potential, very good passer. You know, the athleticism and size are an issue. But what were your thoughts on the Trae Young pick and taking the risk of not getting Luka?
Well, I don't think the Hawks are ever going to look back at this and say that trading away Luka Doncic was a successful move. If you followed me on Twitter, if you followed my writing up till now, you'll know, well, I was a huge Luka stan going into the draft. And when it happened, it was pretty heartbreaking for me and for a lot of the Hawks community. But the olive branch that gets extended from that is picking Trae Young fits the mold that we're going to be a high-volume three-point shooting team, and that's what we're going to build this team around. That's what they did with picking Young and Herter and Spellman, all guys that can shoot, basically getting away all the guys that couldn't shoot that were on the roster last year and building the team that they have now around, you know, all guys that can really spread the floor and shoot. And so when he picks Trae Young and he's now the point guard of the future for this team, you're doing it because he was the by far the best three-point shooter in this class. And, you know, obviously his passing is exceptional too. If you watched him at Summer League, you could really see that clearly. It's a good pick. It's a marketable pick in terms of just as what was brought up earlier, the Hawks not being a really big, you know, not being a team that was talked about much, being very low in attendance. I got like Young, who dominated as much as he did in college, who has Quavo talking about all the time, how about she loves him and stuff like that. It's very good for the market of the team and for getting more fan investment towards the team. And so in all that regard, I mean, at the end of the day, as long as he doesn't hugely bust, and I don't think that he will, I don't think he'll be exceptional to start. I don't think he'll have a great That's how his career is over. We're going to look back and say this. He was a good pick to start off, really, the tank.
Yeah, I think the Trae Young pick is a pick that could make or break your job as a GM. You know, I think being a sort of under-the-radar sort of team, one of the lesser-market teams like Atlanta, Memphis, all those sort of teams, you're better off taking those flyers because if it turns out, then, you know, it's a franchise-altering sort of decision like you were sort of alluding to there, Justin. But he was one of, you know, despite his up and down summer league, he still averaged 17 points, nearly 7 assists. His field goal percentage wasn't great at 38%, but, you know, we saw all the signs that we were talking about, that elite passing. I think his passing is better than his shooting, to be honest. I think a lot of people that are in the know probably think that as well, but, you know, everyone sort of sees the flashy shooting that he had in Oklahoma. But yeah, I think that he was a bit of a reach personally, but I heard some people who had him as high as number 2, number 3 in some of their mock drafts. So it depends on what you value. And I clearly see, like Justin said, as again, that Travis Schlenk is sort of building a Warriors sort of style team here with the capable shooting, which is where the league is right now. And if you've got the system and if you've got the coach around it and you've got the players around it, then who knows what can happen. And I think Trae Young is going to be the impetus for that, at the sort of core for that and to how this goes, for how successful it is. But, you know, it's going to be an up and down season for him. But, you know, he could still be around that Rookie of the Year mark. We don't know.
I'm waiting for this.
So this trade was first off terrible, as you guys have mentioned. They missed the mark on this. They're going to look back at this, and they're going to have tons of regrets when the GM is looking for a job in the next 4 years.
Yikes!
Trae Young, and I've said this before, Justin, hold on. he's going to be out of the league within 6 years. I think he's going to be a bust. He just reminds me a lot of kind of like the Jimmer Fredette hype. Although I do think Trae Young's better because he is a lot quicker than Jimmer Fredette ever was. But I just see a lot of similarities. You know, the kid in college who lights it up. The shooting is phenomenal, but the defense is suspect. Trae Young is also kind of small. You know, he's not a big guy. Obviously, a lot of rookies come into the league. They don't have a lot of size on them. And then, you know, Antetokounmpo is probably like the greatest example of how small he was when he came into the league. And now that guy's pushing, you know, boulders for workouts. I just don't see it for Trae Young. Maybe he goes overseas and becomes a huge sensation in China, but I just don't see anything resulting in a successful NBA career for Trae Young.
I'd love to use that time machine that you have, Corey, whenever I can. I don't necessarily antagonize anything that you said. I think it's a fair, valid point. And I said, I don't think they're ever going to look back at the trade and say that, you know, they won the trade or that they won't have some sort of regret with the trade. But in terms of Trae being this lineup college kid that we've seen before, when you look at guys like Jimmer or even like Doug McDermott or those typical guys that lit up in college and kind of busted out in the NBA, those guys were all upperclassmen, junior and senior. What Trae Young did, college basketball has not seen a kid like that, a kid who can score like that, come in as a freshman and do what he did. And so in terms of just being correlated to those other guys, I don't think you can really say that, because in Trey's case, we haven't really seen a case like that, especially the fact that he led the nation in scoring and assists. And so even if the scoring does fall off in the NBA to the point where, you know, it's not even worth with him, he'll still always have that passing. And I do agree with what Dustin said earlier, that his passing really is at this point better than his scoring. The vision, you know, the ability to put touch passes exactly where they need to be and make right passes, I think that's going to keep him around and keep him as a high-end starter for longer than 6 years, I hope, at least.
Yeah, no, I think the passing is what separates him. I think it gives him more. And I think going the situation, you know, the Hawks took their shot, and it could turn out to be, I mean, like you guys said, they'll probably never win the trade, but they do have the first-round pick next year, so they have to hit on that pick, too, to look back and be like, all right, this trade wasn't as terrible. But it's really hard to pass on a player like Luka, especially when you're in the rebuild. But Trae Young, you know, we'll see what happens with him. Moving on to their other pick, the 19th pick, Kevin Huerter, you know, a shooter with developing skill set scoring-wise, has some potential as a defender. I've heard him be compared as a super, super light Klay Thompson. What were your thoughts on this pick?
I love the pick when it happened. I absolutely adored the pick when it happens. Huerter is an A-class scorer. I mean, he has length at 6'7", or great wingspan, has a nice fluid jumper that has a release point that's very hard to contest because of how high it is. He can get to the rim, and he can finish sort of contorted acrobatic layups and, you know, differentiating ways around the rim. He's got good flow of the game, too. I respect the Klay comparison, because when you look at Klay when he came out of Washington State, there were some similarities there between the two. You're not going to say that he's going to be what Klay Thompson has been, because that's just a bit outrageous. But, I mean, if Kent Bazemore gets traded, this is the guy that's going to be starting at the two. And I think if he were to go in that role, I think he would actually have, you know, a decent season, because he is a guy that I view as, you know, more of a league-ready scorer than even Trae Young is right now. I think he'll have good efficiency. You know, I think he'll be able to shoot the three ball very well. It's just a great value pick to get at 19 for the second year in a row.
Yeah, I think, you know, hitting on two number 19 picks, we'll have to see how Huerter pans out. And he is recovering from hand surgery. That should have him back quite soon, actually, because that was before the draft, around June 14th. So it's been around 2 months where they said the recovery time, as Warriors reported. So he should be back in training. I haven't seen many videos or any reports from the Atlanta Hawks yet. But yeah, everything that Justin said was basically important. He has some really good potential, and I like the sort of tandem with him and Trae Young. I think that's a really nice young nucleus. I think Kevin Huerter is going to have to get in that Klay mold, sort of what you were saying there, Nick. He's going to have to become a very good defender and quickly. Obviously, you know, it's very hard for rookies to make much of an impact as a defender their first year in the league. You know, Franklin Lekina was probably an aberration, if that. So, but I do like the pick. And I think, you know, as a sort of mid sort of lottery range, mid sort of first round range, I think this is the perfect pick for the Hawks and for what they're trying to build going forward.
Yeah, I was a big fan of this pick. I mean, the kid got better and better. And well, he only played in college for 2 years, but, you know, his scoring numbers jumped up from 9 to 14. His shooting percentage went from 37 to 41% from three. So you just hope these kind of shooting numbers translate to the NBA. Trae Young, I think, will help create space for him. And that's just about developing. But I really do like this pick. This was one that I was hoping this guy was going to continue to fall in the draft, and he obviously got swooped up by the Hawks.
So he'll last more than 6 years, probably.
Yeah, no, this guy will be around for 10 plus. He's got that mold.
No, but like you guys said, I really like the fit. Just kind of gives you an idea what kind of style they're trying to play. Justin kind of mentioned a little bit earlier, the three-point shooting gives him some major splash, and there's some real potential with there. And he might have slipped a little bit because, like Jack mentioned, getting the injury prior to the draft, I'm sure a few teams were a little bit more scared to take him. Then with a 30th pick, they grabbed Omari Spellman. Thoughts on him?
I think he's he's a really exhibit A version of just a bench or a backup power forward coming off the bench. He's not an exception. I don't think he'll ever be a starter, but as a guy you can just bring off the bench and, you know, get scoring, get perimeter shooting, and get some rim protection, I think he was a very good pick at that number 30 spot. He is a good three-point shooter. You saw that in the summer league. And, you know, not a great overall defender, but a guy who can block shots and protect the rim. And I think he'll have a pretty decent impact right away because he is, you know, he's built for that role that he's going to play, just to come off the bench and produce. So as long as, you know, nobody's expecting, you know, him to be, you know, starting next to John Collins by the end of the season, I think we'll look at him and view him as a good pick.
Yeah, I do like the sort of skill set that he provides next to Collins if those two are sort of going to be their front court going forward because, you know, Al Horford, he could be an Al Horford light version, if that, because, you know, all the sort of skills that he has, you know, decent defender, decent rim protector, nice shooter, okay passer, you know, working, a hard-working rebounder, you know, all these sort of things, you know, are sort of things you sort of think about when you think of Al Horford, you know, former Atlanta Hawks. So, you know, as well, you know, at that 30 pick, you know, you can't really go wrong. You know, you might as well take a flyer and a guy that can sort of fit your mold. And for him, you know, he's 6'9", so he's not necessarily have the height and capability, but he does have a beyond 7-foot wingspan. So he's got some nice measurabilities about him. So yeah, I don't mind the pick for Amari Spellman. I think, you know, this draft, apart from Trae Young, was a successful one for the Hawks franchise.
I mean, Spellman's a good pick. Obviously, he's coming off a national title of Villanova. He was also the Big East Rookie of the Year. I like this pick. It's a guy who's been around a winning culture, a winning environment in Villanova. So maybe some of that translates. And obviously, like you guys mentioned, he's pretty versatile. Maybe he can kind of play like an Al Horford role in the future. You do like the fact that he shot, you know, 44.6% from the arc, behind the arc last year, or as a redshirt freshman, I should say, excuse me. Yeah, I'm okay with this. The last two picks for the Hawks, to me, they were solid picks, but obviously the first one to me is going to be the one that sticks out.
Does it make up for them, guys?
No.
It's just you have to hit on that first one.
And they got to hit next year too. I think next year getting the extra pick, it like puts pressure on them to make sure they land something because we don't really know what's going to happen with the Mavs. You know, we have predictions all over the place, people saying playoffs to people saying lottery team. So I think that also kind of matters too.
But it's top five protected, that pick, I believe.
Yeah, it definitely. Yeah, I believe it's top five protected. Yeah, and I don't think Trae Young is like as bad of his pick. I just think the fact that it's tied to Luka makes it like seem a lot worse.
Yeah. Like the Fulton Tatum thing. It's going to be, you know, an intertwined storyline for their entire careers.
If they get R.J. Barrett, I'll be on board a little bit more. I like R.J. Barrett.
Zion Williamson.
That's the pick I've been tying to the Hawks for months now. That would be a perfect fit if he wound up going there.
Hey, you never know what will happen. You know, it could turn into a really nice rebuild for the Hawks. Moving on from the draft picks, though, they did some moves trade-wise. They had a trade with our Brooklyn Nets. Jeremy Lin to the Hawks. Obviously, the Hawks got a future second-round pick, a future pick swap. You know, I think Jack told me it was going to be like a sixth grader or something along those lines. But what were your thoughts on Jeremy Lin going to Atlanta?
At first I thought he was going to get bought out immediately because of the fact that Schroeder was still on the roster, and I was pretty bummed thinking about that. But they end up doing what I wanted them to do in ditching Schroeder and keeping Lin. I think that's a great veteran presence to have play with Young and a guy that you can really put out there and kind of, you know, split their minutes so Trey's not, you know, carrying a ridiculous load. As the point guard, you can have Lin come on for about 20 to 25 minutes a game and sort of set that tempo. And since he's been around for so long, have him do the things, you know, that otherwise Trey would have to do if Lin weren't there. And I think if Young had all that responsibility on him as a rookie, it would wind up resulting in a negative connotation for him. So I think it's a really great get for the Hawks just to have a backup point guard, the guy that's a veteran that's been there, done that, can help him, you know, really mold himself out as a point guard.
Yeah, we've had nothing but great things to say about Jeremy Lin on the Brooklyn Buzz, myself and Nick. And, you know, I was a bit disappointed to see him go because he could never really realize his potential with us. But at the same time, like you were saying, Justin, I think you guys got a good get there. I think he's going to be a nice sort of mentoring presence. You know, he was one of the famed leaders, you know, a famed locker room presence with us and all the other teams he's been on for that matter. I think he's going to have a real impact for the Atlanta Hawks. hopefully that patella tendon injury he can recover from. You know, he's still on the road to recovery. You know, he had his exhibition game with Rondo Hollis Jefferson and the Nets owner Joseph Tsai a couple of weeks ago. So hopefully he's on the mend. Hopefully he's healthy by, you know, training camp and the start of the season, because, you know, I want to see him get back to his best, because, you know, at his best, Jeremy Lin is one of the best six men in the league, one of the best backup point guards. And I think he still has a decent amount to offer. And I hope that, you know, he brings a bit of buzz to the Atlanta Hawks and, you know, brings that sort of new fan base, because the Nets sort of were able to reap those rewards a little bit. Because, you know, the times I went to, you know, Nets games and saw like Nets fandom, there was a lot of sort of Jeremy Lin fandom. So wherever he goes, you know, he brings plenty of fans with him. So hopefully that adds something as well outside of the on-court sort of presence too.
Yeah, this was a good trade only because it led to Dennis Schroeder being dealt. Yeah. I mean, they're not the only reason. I shouldn't say that. I think Jeremy Lin's a solid addition for what the Hawks want to do. Obviously, you get rid of Schroeder, you bring in a vet who can mentor Trae Young, can still take over the offense, as you guys mentioned at times. The biggest question mark will be if Jeremy Lin stays healthy. And even if he doesn't stay healthy, if you're the Hawks, you're not terribly mad, because then you're losing more games still. But I think this was a good move, just because Jeremy Lin also was a big part of the reason why, a big part of the process in changing the culture in Brooklyn. You know, he was there when they were really bad, and then he was still there when they were on the up and up of becoming a more relevant franchise. So I think this is a solid move for the Hawks, but it doesn't do anything crazy for me personally.
Yeah, I mean, they got some second round picks with that as well. You know, like you guys said, the injury for Jeremy Lin is going to determine a lot how much value you can provide them on the court. But in the worst case scenario, he's that steadying vet in the locker room. He adds to the culture, helps the Hawks kind of establish things, and makes Trae Young's life a little bit easier. Moving on to Justin Anderson, who was part of the OKC and Philly trade, you know, a nice guy who had a really nice rookie season with the Mavs and obviously moved to Philly, didn't do as much there, taking a flyer on a young guy. What were your thoughts on adding Justin Anderson?
I thought it was a very good acquisition. It's one that's not a lot of people are talking about when it comes to the moves that the Hawks did end up making, how they got him. I think he's another nice young piece to really throw out there with everything else that they have. Athletic as all gets out, developed his three-point shot very nicely last year. I think he's just going to be a good fit. It's a good opportunity for him to get a good load of minutes, get a really good opportunity to show what he can do. And, you know, maybe at the end of the day, he'll wind up being, you know, a French starter or a guy you can potentially move again for some more assets. But, you know, you can't fault getting good, young, talented players. And that's exactly what Justin Anderson is.
Yeah, he's worth the flyer. I think the Sixers lost. You know, they sort of had this sort of glut of all these sort of pieces. What are they going to do? They had to get rid of Timothy Lual Cabarrot as well. They had to get rid of him, ship him off. So I think, yeah, the Justin Anderson acquisition is a nice one. You know, really good energy. From what I've heard, you know, he is a great sort of locker room guy as well, despite being, you know, still relatively young. You know, really sort of friendly dude. You know, gets along really well with everyone. And I don't think he's going to, you know, hurt the sort of chemistry. And I think he knows he's going to have a point to prove. You know, being sort of shipped around a little bit, Dallas, you know, Philly. He didn't get that opportunity in Philadelphia. Hopefully Lloyd Pierce gives him somewhat of a chance in the rotation this season in Atlanta, because I think he has some, you know, tangible skills that can add value to an NBA team.
I think his highlight with the Hawks was probably when – or not with the Hawks, with the Sixers, was probably when he almost fought Wade in that first round. Probably the first thing that comes to mind when I think of Justin Anderson. Yeah, I mean, it's a solid move. Another young kid, you know, he's going to be entering his fifth year in the league. You know, hopefully he can develop his game a little bit further. Probably going to be a backup wing to Prince. I don't dislike this move, though. I think it's solid, especially where the Hawks are going direction. Getting another young asset, like you guys mentioned, is never a bad thing.
Yeah. Anytime you're in a rebuild, taking a flyer on somebody. And it's good for Justin Anderson, too, because he has an opportunity to kind of prove himself. I believe he's on an expiring contract, Jeremy Lin as well. So for the Hawks, there's not really much to lose with these trades. Players don't work out. They can buy them out midseason or let their contracts expire. If you had a guess, which guy do you think is more likely to be traded this season, Jeremy Lin or Justin Anderson?
I'd probably go Jeremy Lin. But it's going to be if Jeremy Lin can stay healthy enough that he shows some value. You know, like sort of, I think Justin alluded to a little bit earlier, he could even get bought out at the same time, you know, if that sort of means in the, you know, he can go to a, a playoff team possibly. You know, he was rumored to some playoff teams as well. You know, there are teams that still need a point guard. I think Jeremy Lin can be a fringe starter as well. But yeah, Justin Anderson, I don't think, you know, he could get traded because, but at the same time, he's young enough that they'll want to see something from him. And I think they'll give him, you know, 82 games possibly. Whereas Jeremy Lin, we know what he is. He's sort of established himself. Whereas Anderson has yet to realize any of his potential.
Yeah, I think Justin Anderson would be a guy that the Hawks would rather keep out of those two for a longer period of time just because he is still young and there's still a lot of upside, potential upside for him to really prove himself. And the fact that, you know, they're going to be contenders that are going to need a backup point guard that could use what Lin brings to a team. So I would definitely say Lin's the more likely to get shipped, even though I hope it doesn't happen because then they wouldn't really have a backup point guard. Then that would be, you know, a bigger mess. But yeah, definitely Lin.
I think if both are healthy, Jeremy Lin makes the most sense from a value standpoint. I think you can flip Jeremy Lin for probably more, some kind of more of a value of an asset, whether it's a pick or another young player coming back. So I would have to say Jeremy Lin. But I wouldn't be surprised if Anderson got more calls, especially if, like we said, if Jeremy Lin doesn't come back from that knee injury, you know, maybe if he loses a step or whatever the case may be.
Yeah, definitely something to keep an eye on, too. Obviously, the Hawks are looking to get as many assets as they possibly can. Moving on to free agent signings, probably I would say one of the more surprising – I don't want to even say more surprising since we saw so many surprising signings in free agency, but a surprise, Vince Carter signed with veteran minimum with the Hawks.
I was ecstatic. Literally jumped out of my seat when I saw that signing. Best move they made all offseason, and I really have no idea how they pulled it off.
Me neither.
Whatsoever. Vince is an exceptional addition just because, you know, how he is, just because he's Vince Carter. Great locker room presence. You know, he'll be able to help the younglings that they have. He'll just, you don't look at that signing and really, there's nothing bad about it. It's just a great signing to make. The only bad thing would be is me crying at the end of the year when he's playing his last game and they finish 18 and or with 18 wins and he's like coming off and like, oh, this is the end for me. Like, I would have loved to see him get a ring or at least get one last little playoff run. But, you know, I'm not complaining about it. I love the signing to death.
Yeah, I'm wondering what was sort of said to him in the free agency pitch that made him. I mean, you know, it's sort of like, you know, look, maybe it was just like Lloyd Pierce and Travis Slank saying, look, we're not the Sacramento Kings, and then that's just like what sort of got him out of there.
I believe Vince said that he went there because he wants to play.
Yeah,
I think all the other teams he said he talked to say he wouldn't really get minutes. I think he said that he wanted to go to Atlanta because he would get an opportunity to get some more run on the floor and, you know, get more minutes before he hangs them all up.
He would still be behind in the rotation of guys like Torian Prince, Kevin Huerter, Kent Bazemore. But right. Obviously, he will see some time. And I think, you know, we sort of saw him play some time in Sacramento as well. But, you know, obviously with all the additions that they've made, it seems less and less likely. But, yeah, I think his value is going to be made the most off the floor. Vin Sanity is back. Vin Sanity, Lin Sanity, Len Sanity. All the Sanities are in Atlanta right now. It's going to be fun.
It's like sanity or something. I would have liked to see Vince Carter ring chase, but I guess you have to respect the fact that he'd rather play, right? I think it would be cool, the fact that we're going to probably still see Vince Carter at the age of 40 playing, you know, 15 to 20 minutes a game, which isn't much, but, you know, still Mono gets it done at that kind of rate. You know, seeing him rev up the engine for maybe a 40-year-old dunk for Orlando is going to be kind of exciting. What's the over-under on what he scores? You know, does he score over 15 per game? What are we at right now in the over-under for Vince Carter with the Hawks?
7.
Yeah.
Maybe, 10 maybe at much. Maybe 7 or 8.
I know I saw somebody say like 20 a game. I know it's August and we need hot takes, but this is one that's on fire.
Contact him with a hot take marathon, mate. Yeah.
I wouldn't complain.
He will still turn 42 this season. His birthday is in January 26, so 42 in January.
I mean, the Hawks need to sell tickets. Vince Carter averaging 20 a game.
Yeah, and I mean, he'll sell some jerseys as well. Like, you know, I'd love to get like a Vince Atlanta jersey. I think that'd be pretty sick to have. Add that to the collection.
Think about that before you say it.
Oh, come on, man. Just because you hate everything that the Atlanta Hawks have done over the past
That's not true. They had Al Horford. I love Al Horford.
But yeah, I mean, it's just Vinsanity, maybe. I mean, he's just one of the most likable guys, you know, despite, you know, his time in Toronto sort of being tarnished somewhat. He's rebuilt his reputation and become one of the more likable characters. Him and Dirk, you know, they're going to be plenty of sort of storylines relating to them. But hopefully this isn't his last year. And if it is, you know, we see some highlights from him, like you were saying, Corey, a couple of dunks. Yeah, bring back Vinsanity for the dunk contest 2019.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. I think just, you know, if you look at the Hawks in terms of like a locker room and marketability, you look at the Jeremy Lin edition and the Vince Carter edition and even Trae Young in terms of marketability, that kind of helps them a lot off the court. You know, these moves don't necessarily help them a ton on the court, but in the locker room and with the marketing and trying to sell tickets, adding a player like Vince should definitely help in that area. Moving on to another free agent signing, Alex Len. Now, I saw conflicting reports on this. I saw one report saying he signed a two-year deal for 8.5, and then I saw another report saying that he signed a one-year deal. Either way, it's a flyer and a young big. Justin, have you heard any more details on the contract?
I think it's a two-year with the second year being a player option.
Gotcha.
That's what makes the most sense to me. Y'all can quote me on this. The Phoenix Suns developmental system is complete garbage.
Oh,
so getting Alex Len, I'm not saying he's going to be a stud in Atlanta, but, you know, he is, you know, it's similar to getting Justin Anderson. It's a young guy who was picked high in the draft when he came out. He's got upside, maybe in a new system with, you know, better coaching and all that stuff around him, could get to better production. I don't think he ends up being a starter because I think Dwayne Dedman's already proven himself to be the starter in that role, and obviously you're not going to bench John Collins either. But, you know, I think Atlanta would be a good place for him to really restart everything for him. And, you know, I don't think we'll look at it as a great signing or really a memorable signing, but it's a good little experiment to see what you can do with him.
Yeah, I mean, I don't hate it, but the thing I do hate is the fact that if it is a two-year, $8.5 million deal with a player option and a not a team option, I mean, I'm sure those details will come out soon enough. Who was going to give that money to Alex Len in the first place? Like, really, he's like, he would have got the vet minimum, you know, maybe somewhere around that range, give him 2 years around that. You know, we got Ed Davis for 1 year at the mid-level exception. It just doesn't make a lot of sense. You know, there's just a lot of these moves that Travis Schlenk has made. Some of them have been good. Some of them, like, you know, home runs. Some of them, you know, you get the third base. But some of them are just, like, head-scratching. Like, and this one, for me, is one of them. I think Alex Len is worth the flyer. You know, he was a, you know, former lottery pick. You know, never really realized any potential whatsoever in Phoenix. But, you know, he might get more of a run here in Atlanta. You know, he is definitely behind Dwayne Dedman. I think people sleep on him a bit. You know, he had a very solid season. But, you know, he may be shipped out, you know, by the time the trade deadline is around. He might get bought out. He might get traded or whatever. And maybe that means Alex Len ends up starting alongside John Collins, or who knows. But yeah, maybe Lloyd Pierce works his wonders. I think that's the best we can hope for.
I do agree with you. Schlenk has made some questionable moves, and I've said numerous times growing up, and excluding the Dennis Schroeder trade, I don't think Schlenk made any trades that you could look at and say that he won or that they were really good value trades whatsoever. And so I agree with you in the sense that some of the moves have been great and they have been, you know, exceptional for progressing this rebuild, and others that you look at and just like, what the hell is he doing?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't have to dislike Alex Len. Defensively, obviously, there's a lot of question marks. Last year, he did shoot a career high 56%. Whatever that means on a crap ass Suns team. But, you know, when you're looking,
on shade.
Yeah, right. Yes, that's what I'm made for. But when you're on a rebuilding team, as you, I think you made a great point, Jack, about Dedman. You know, Dedman likely could be moved. I mean, that deal isn't crazy. It's a friendly deal.
He wanted to be moved as well, didn't he? Am I mistaken in saying that, Justin?
Oh, sorry.
He wanted to be moved last season. There were some rumblings, and like there was some on court, like he visibly showed that like he partly didn't want to. He was a professional as much as he wanted to be, but I think, you know, similar to the Bellinelli, similar to Eliasova, he wanted to be moved to a place where he could, you know, be in a winning franchise.
Dwayne Dedman did?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that
I don't remember anything like that. Really, for that good chunk of the Eliasova and Bellinelli, he was injured, and he was also in the state of still proving himself because everywhere else he had been in before here, really, he was signed as a very unproven player, and, you know, he had an exceptional season last year in my eyes, really better. I didn't really hear anything about him saying he wanted to be moved. And if he did, I feel like he wouldn't have bought into that second year of his contract. But you may have heard something that I didn't. And if he does end up getting moved, I definitely see it happening just because he is a high-value young center that a contender or a playoff team could really use.
Yeah, the trade deadline, the Sixers showed some interest. So I knew I wasn't, you know, just throwing out just wild hot takes. But I think, yeah, like it's going to be interesting to see what his season's going to be like. You know, he's sort of an outlier in terms of this rebuilding sort of thing. He's, you know, still young enough, but he's not sort of, you know, a franchise piece going forward when they're looking to challenge for the playoffs.
I mean, I think he's a perfect complementary center. Just being able to shoot threes, being able to be an exceptional pick and roll defender, to be a great role man in the screen roll game, no. I want Atlanta to keep him for as long as possible.
Yeah, I think the one thing for that, they probably might look at the timeline and be like, yo, where are we at? Can we get good value for him? What is the team going to send us? I don't think they'll give him up for nothing, but if somebody's offering a solid asset, they might take it, especially having Len there, who could be a solid big. And like you said, you know, things in Phoenix just didn't really work out. There was some confusion at times, you know, how many minutes he was playing, is he rotation? He was dealing with injuries. So there's a chance that Len could really pop off in Atlanta as well. But moving to the other side of free agency departures, looking at the trade front, they got rid of Dennis Schroeder and Mike Muscala in the same trade. What are they going to lose getting rid of these two guys?
Or gain. But, obviously, Schroeder is, you know, it's a guy they invested in. Like Jack said, they traded Jeff Teague with the mindset of Schroeder being the guy for the foreseeable future, and that just didn't work out. And the fact that, you know, they're having the – in return, they had to pay $28 million to Melo to make that trade work out is, you know, a little bit of a bad taste left on the tongue, even though they did get a first-round pick and wound up getting Justin Anderson out of that. I mean, I'll never say Schroeder is, you know, a bad player in that sense. I think he's a bad starter, but, you know, he was a guy, a high-volume scorer. He was always great going to the rim, exceptional physical traits, very underrated passer. I think Jack brought up some very nice Pat, you know, assisting, facilitating stats in terms of how he played last year. Also, you're losing a veteran and a young piece that, you know, you invested a lot in. With Muscala, you know, same kind of case. He was there for, you know, a good few years. Was there for the 60-win team. Now he was the second guy from that 60-win team. And now Kent Bazemore is the only one left on that team now. You know, he's a good perimeter shooter, doesn't really offer much on the defensive end, but, you know, a guy that Hawks fans really liked, and when he played, he was, you know, a guy you look at, it was like, all right, he's decent. But outside of just, you know, just them being veterans and guys that were on the team for a good while, you know, they weren't offering much for the future of the team and for the rebuild. And so trading them is just something you look back on and say, you know, it had to be done.
Yeah, I'm going to provide a Corey-like hot take here. Dennis Schroeder, for me, will be most remembered for that horrible orange blotch in his hair. Like, it's just, I don't, like, as much as he had highlights and I mentioned those stats and stuff, you know, he's one of my least favorite players. He would always do something against the Nets as well, which would always, you know, irk me as well. He would always, like, you know, get up for us, which always made me, you know, annoyed because it's one of the few games that we could have won over the past couple of years. But yeah, I think getting rid of him was, you know, valuable in the sense, you know, whether it was valuable enough to sort of, you know, buy out Melo, as well as that sort of protected first round. And we don't know what that is going to turn into in a couple of years' time. You know, but at the same time, you know, there's value for both sides in that sense. Muscala, yeah, I think, you know, the only thing he provides, like Justin said, is perimeter shooting. And I think, you know, the fact that it was dealt to the Sixers as well, seems like the Sixers have a thing for Hawks cast-offs, Bellinelli, Ilyasova, Muscala. Deadman could be next. Who knows?
I don't know. With Schroeder, I think we'll always remember him dropping 41 on the Jazz while they were in the thick of the playoff hunt. That was awesome. Not much other than that, though.
Yeah. I think the plus side, if you're the Hawks, the fact you got rid of Schroeder and the issues that come with them, Muscala is just kind of like the fill-in. The negative is you had to pay Melo, you know, what, all but like $2.4 million of his contract because then the rest got picked up by Houston.
Did you see? Did you guys see that LeBron tweeted like he had the best, like his tweet about Melo's time in Atlanta when they put out the jersey? They put out, I think the Hawks Twitter page or Hoopsup or whatever put out a tweet of, you know, the Carmelo Anthony Atlanta Hawks jersey, and like LeBron responded, I got like 40,000 retweets. It's like, man, that's the most memorable time of your career, bro. It was very funny.
Yeah, so I mean. I like this trade a lot for the Thunder because they got a sixth man out of this deal. For the Hawks, though, it's just this was giving the keys to the city and the team to Trae Young.
And I think another thing in the Schroeder aspect of getting rid of him, they got rid of his contract for the next two seasons as well. Not only is he on contract for this year, but the following two seasons for $15 million, which isn't a terrible deal, but just when you're a rebuilding team, having cap space is an advantage. Taking on bad contracts to get more picks always works out. And both guys, like you guys kind of mentioned, weren't going to really move the needle and make them a franchise-changing move. Moving on, though, to the free agent losses, you guys let me know if there's anybody you think they're really going to miss or we should stop on. Malcolm Delaney, Damian Lee, Isaiah Taylor, Josh Magette, Antonius Cleveland, Tyler Kavanaugh, Andrew White, and Jalen Morris. Anybody that really they're going to miss or you wish that they had kept, Justin?
Some of those guys had very nice games for the Hawks last year. Damian Lee, Isaiah Taylor were both decent contributors while they were here off the bench. It was good. It was fun to see young guys that, you know, I liked in college, that I watched in college. Delaney was a guy that, you know, spent a couple years overseas, then came over for 2 years and really started as a backup point guard. They were fun guys to watch to see get an opportunity and to show what they can do. Damian Lee wound up with the Warriors. That was great for him, honestly. But, you know, it was really nobody that we could really see being brought back or guys we were looking at like, hey, we really need them back on this team just because they were unproven guys who really just were picked up to fill out the roster spots. Guys I like, nothing is all of them. I think some of those were really nice players, Antonius Cleveland being one of them. But no, nothing that I'd look back and say that, you know, I regret not bringing this guy back.
Hashtag crickets.
What about you, Corey?
So long, goodbye. See you next fall. None of these guys are big. I mean, Delaney may be the only guy you slightly miss, but you got Jeremy Lin. Hopefully he's healthy. A lot of these guys for me are a name I probably won't ever hear again.
Yeah, I mean, no one they're really going to miss. They took some flyers on these guys. None of them really proved a ton, so they'll open a new roster space and kind of bring in some new young guys this year. Now to the fun stuff, the predictions. First off, we'll start with the starters. What's your starting five on opening night?
Thing that Cam Bazemore will still be on the roster. I guess I'll give two different ones where if Bazemore gets traded or not. But if Bazemore's still on the team, it'll be Trae Young, Cam Bazemore, Taurean Prince, John Collins, and Dwayne Dedmon. And if Cam Bazemore winds up getting traded, then it'll be Trey Herder at the two, then Prince, Collins, and Dedmon.
Yep, that's basically mine as well.
That's exactly mine. Except for if they trade Bazemore, I think there's a slight chance Jeremy Lin maybe starts a shooting guard, but probably not.
Yeah, possibly.
And I think a lot of with Lin, too, is going to depend how healthy he is in by the time training camp starts and whatnot, but I think you guys are pretty spot on. I've heard rumblings that there is some potential of Jeremy Lin starting at point guard and easing a load for Trae Young. Do you think that would be a possibility? Just to start the season, it was mentioned, like, the first 10 games.
Yeah, most guys' first six games, I think, for the Hawks are on the road. I think if Lin's healthy, he's ready to go, he's comfortable to start, I wouldn't mind it just because I don't think I've never viewed Trey as a guy who needed to start right away. To put a huge load on him, I feel like would be a big mistake. He's a guy that you really need to let ease into the professional game, and letting him come off the bench against, you know, fellow role players and guys who aren't as a high level as opposing team starters, I think would actually be, you know, it wouldn't be something I'd be against.
I mean, I don't get it because, you know, Trae Young is your franchise going forward. So if you're trying to sort of ease a load of him, you know, you're better off sort of like throwing him in and going, okay, this is what you're in for. We'll support you through it. You know, so he can experience the ups and downs because there are going to be plenty of them in an 82-game season. So, you know, get him out there on game night, get him out on game one, you know, the home games and stuff, because he is what you're building around. It doesn't make a lot of sense for me to ease anyone in. You know, this is the NBA now. This is, you know, the big guys league. You know, there's no sort of, you know, soft lead-ins and that sort of sense. It makes sense, you know, if sort of, you know, Jeremy Lin is 100% healthy, but I don't even think he's going to be 100% healthy. You know, I think Trae Young is the starter. He should be the starter. And unless he experiences any injuries, you know, it'd probably make more sense, like you sort of alluded to, Corey, that, you know, Jeremy Lin starts at the shooting guard next to him.
Yeah, I mean, I'm saying to start the countdown first game of the season for Trae Young.
Yeah.
Burn it down. Let him fall apart from the start.
You are sick.
I think from – all right, let me get back to being serious.
You know, wait, Corey, before you keep going, you know what Corey reminds me of whenever we do, like, these podcasts, and I love the hot takes, you know the meme where it's like the house is on fire and then the guys – and the person's looking at the camera just smiling? That's just Corey every day of the week for me.
I'm the dog. I'm just like, yeah, this is fine. This is Yeah, I think for the Hawks, what makes the most sense is to start Trae Young off the gate, even if I think he's going to be a failure. You drafted him for a reason. You traded away Schroeder. Jeremy Lin is supposed to be the guy to kind of take the pressure off of him, not to start the game and have Trae Young be the sixth man off the bench. I think for the Hawks, you might as well let, you know, that young core start. You know, put Collins out there, put Young out there. Prince, if you keep Bazemore or whatnot, but let those three pieces of your core kind of develop further. Let them play together. Let them get game time. Let them get some chemistry. I wouldn't start Jeremy Lin even for a game. I would just start with Trae Young. Let the rookie play.
I see. I think Jeremy Lin won't be 100% if he was. I could see the mindset. It would remind me something going over to another sport like the NFL when you draft a rookie quarterback and you don't start him right away. You start him after four games. You kind of let him ease in and kind of take that pressure off a little bit. And like Justin mentioned, he'll be on the road. So I see that as a possibility, but I really doubt that Jeremy Lin will be 100%. And we really don't know what type of player Lin's going to be coming off that patella tendon injury, as Jack mentioned earlier. So there's concern. If I put my money on to be Young, but I wouldn't be completely opposed to Lin either. Like, I think there is some value, especially NBA players' confidence being an issue and him being a small guy and him hearing all the hype about being boom or bust. You might want to be careful with his confidence. But other than that, do you think there'll be any positional battles or everything's pretty locked up?
There could be a little bit at the shooting guard. Like, if Bazemore is kept, him and Herter, you know, if Carter's playing, you know, 25 minutes, averaging 20 points a game, then he's going to need some time as well. But yeah, I think other than that, you know, Young and Lin, Deadman and Len maybe a little bit. And maybe if, you know, Spellman shows some real signs, you know, at that power four position, him and Collins might fight it out for some minutes as well. But I think that they're versatile enough with, like, you know, that, you know, a guy like Herter can play the shooting guard and even the small forward. You know, Lin can play the point guard or the shooting guard. You know, Collins can play the power forward or the center. So I think that they've got enough sort of versatile players that there won't be much of positional battles throughout this season.
I mean, maybe center. Maybe if Alex Lynn kind of comes out of the gate hot and he puts some pressure on Deadman. But I think Deadman's going to hold on to that position. I don't see a ton of positional battles yet.
Maybe.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think there's going to be a ton. But talking breakout players, who's going to be your breakout starter?
I would say Torian Prince. You know, he kind of broke out last year. But he definitely, I think he has the upside to, you know, take another big step. I mean, last year, shot 5% from three on 175 makes, had a couple of 38 point games, played and started all 82 games. So not saying he's going to average 20, 21 points a game, even though, I mean, he could, but, you know, if he gets up to like 17, maybe 18 points a game alongside, you know, the spacing that Trey's going to offer and a newly revamped 3-point shooting Collins is going to bring, then I could definitely see Prince becoming sort of that, kind of like Brandon Ingram-esque with the Lakers, you know, not including LeBron, like how they were last year when Ingram averaged 18 points a game, just taking that jump as a scorer and handling a lot of the, you know, high-volume scoring role.
Yeah, I think Prince is probably the obvious one here, but I'll go with John Collins, who's probably the second pick. I think that what he showed in Summer League, what we all alluded to earlier, you know, if he can sort of add some versatility to his range, I think he has the potential to be a top three, top five rebounder in the league. You know, I mentioned the fact that he was one of the best offensive rebounders in the game. And for a guy of his size and his sort of capabilities, his athleticism, you know, I think the sky's the limit. I think that, you know, he's going to show leaps and bounds on the offensive end. And I think if he can become a capable defender, he may be one of the better two-way sort of, you know, centers, power forwards, whatever you want to call him. He just has this real X factor about him that, you know, not a lot of other big guys, power forward centers have. You know, he has such a really varied skill set, such a such upside to him that I'm really excited for me. You know, if I'm going to be turned on to Atlanta Hawks games, other than Trae Young, it's going to be for John Collins.
Man, he looked good in summer league.
Yeah, he looked really good.
The way he built up his body, the way he was attacking off dribble and shooting threes, like, I mean, for the time being, he's the face of the franchise.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's my guy too, John Collins. I think playing with the, you know, I haven't really given Trae Young any kind of credit yet in this podcast, but he is a really good passer, as you guys have mentioned. And I think he'll be able to elevate John Collins to another level. And I, like you guys mentioned, in summer league, John Collins is one of the guys of probably a handful of players who caught my eye just by from going from their, you know, rookie season to their sophomore year. John Collins to me, as you just mentioned, Justin, is definitely the face of the franchise right now.
Yeah, I hate to pick the same guys, you guys, but I think Collins, I think even just for the fact that his minutes are going to jump, he didn't play super high minutes last year. I think it was right under 25. So, but I also like Torian Prince, too. If I'm not mistaken, Justin, you could correct me. After the All-Star break, his numbers really popped off and he started to really pick it up. So I could see that being a guy that could have a nice big season for them, too.
But did he have a 40-10 game last year?
He had 2 38-point games.
That's okay, that's – yeah, I know he had some big, he had some big numbers.
And to go along with what you said, after the All-Star break, when Torian Prince really got up, is also when John Collins became the full-time starter.
Interesting. He didn't
start at all, or only a couple of games for the first part of the season. And then really, Budenholzer let him run the show at the center spot, starting every game after that. Just a little bit of tidbit to think about.
Yeah, definitely has an impact on the overall floor. Going to the bench, though, who's going to break it off the bench?
Hartzell, just because, you know, they really did clear out pretty much their entire bench from last year. And, I mean, I thought they did an exceptional job loading in a lot of experienced veterans and guys who fit in to really help benefit the younger guys. But like I said earlier, Vince, I think he's going to be phenomenal. In the locker room, if he, you know, gets a lot of minutes off the bench, we'll see what he can do. I'm excited to see what Lynn can do as, you know, just a primary backup center if Deadman locks in the starting power forward spots. I can't really see anyone breaking out or being a guy. Like, a lot of these guys are on expiring contracts or one-year deals. So if they do play very well, you won't there's a good chance we won't see many of them past this upcoming season. So it'd be kind of hard to pick one guy to really say could break out off the bench, but I'd go with Lynn for now.
Yeah, I think Lynn is the most obvious one. But for me, I'm going to go with the other Val, Lynn. I just think that he's, you know, I think healthy. You know, we can see him recapture his Charlotte days where he was sort of backing up Kemba, and he was one of the best six men, best backup point guards in the league. And I think that that is his ceiling. And, you know, we've seen him break out already, but I think for him to recapture that would be a nice sort of storyline. And, you know, if we're rating the sanities in Atlanta right now, it goes Vin, Lynn, Len.
I love you. I would go with Len. You know, E before I, right? Is that how it goes? I think Len has, I mean, he's the tallest guy on the roster at 7'1", so you like to see that. I don't know why I brought that up. I think the center position is still the one that they're looking for going forward. Deadman, I think, won't be there long term. So Len, I think, has the most incentive to play well off the bench. Obviously, he kind of fell out of the rotation in Phoenix last year. With nobody really giving him trouble for that job. But now it's new, you know, it's new scenes. There's new people around, new faces. I think Len is kind of set to have a really nice role off the bench. And like you kind of mentioned, if Jeremy Lin is healthy, Jack, I think Jeremy Lin also uses Len probably efficiently in the pick and roll.
Yeah, that could be a nice combo off the bench. I'm going to go with the rookie, Kevin Huerter. I think just you kind of mentioned earlier the style, shooting a lot of threes. Justin talked about his release, you know, that high, that smooth stroke. So I think Huerter could just knock down a lot of threes off the bench and maybe be having a really nice rookie season. Going on to season predictions, though, what's best case for the Hawks?
Best case scenario is just that you really get a solid not a solid foundation per se, but just a solid viewing of what you're trying to do. You're saying this guy that we're going to be this mini version of this new version of the Warriors. So you're going to want to see great flashes of 3-point shooting. You want to see Trey, even if he's not shooting that greater percentage, to at least, you know, look comfortable and look in rhythm with a lot, to see him running the offense, to see the other guys, you know, build themselves up as good 3-point shooters. And that's really just the main thing you look at. If you set a goal like that for yourself and you make the moves that they make to get guys who fit this goal that they set for themselves, obviously you want to see these guys build towards that.
Yeah, I mean, we always, sometimes whenever we did these previews, it'd be like, their best case is that they get the number one pick. And that is probably what they would be looking for, yeah, you know. The 2019 class is looking to be a little bit weaker. You know, RJ Barrett, Zion Williamson, whoever else, Cam Radish, could pop up. You know, I think that's the best case scenario for them. But if we're talking wins-wise, you know, I remember I said something like in the mid-30s range last year. Nah, I certainly ate my words there with that one, but I definitely won't go with that. But they could certainly get around the 25 to 28 range. You know, they could, you know, maybe Lloyd Pierce has a real impact. Maybe Trae Young and Kevin Huerter just become this new young dynamic duo out in the East. You know, there's not a lot of competition in terms of talent-wise. That's all sort of in the Western Conference these days. So they're going to have every opportunity to do so. They'll be given the minutes, if healthy. Huerter should be soon enough. So, yeah, for me, you know, you can look at it from two angles, I guess, from best case.
Do I need best case is this team doesn't do well, and they get RJ Barrett. That's the best case scenario. All in on RJ Barrett.
I think best case. Oh, go ahead, Corey.
I'm sorry. And like John Collins takes obviously a step forward, and maybe Trae Young does prove to be not the worst person you could have traded Luka Doncic for, and. And I'll say Taurean Prince elevates his game on the defensive side of the ball.
I'm just trying to focus after the Trae Young slander. 25 wins, I think, best case win-wise. But overall, like you guys said, I think getting a high pick is important. Player development. And I also think trading maybe some of the veterans and trying to get some more assets in here. I'm big on trying to get more assets in here. So I think maybe you can move Lynn. Maybe you can move Deadman. Potential maybe moving some other guys. Even if it's just second-round picks, it's just taking flyers on more young guys. So I think that'd be best case scenario. Worst case scenario.
Corey being right.
That's pretty bad.
Yeah, obviously, if Trey looks so bad to the point where you can immediately say that this was the absolutely wrong move to make, then I don't know, it could really doom the franchise, because as we brought up earlier, the attendance and the fan investment just is not there right now, and it has not been there really for the past few years, or for the better part of this decade, really. You know, if it gets so off track to where I don't know, I can't really see it going so badly to the point where they have to just grab everything and just, you know, start over again.
Yeah, I think in terms of, you know, the worst case is that, you know, they don't get that number one pick with the lottery odds flattening out for the first time this year. You know, yes, they still have a very high percentage if they are going to be the worst team, as, you know, a lot of us predict them to be. But there's still a chance that that doesn't happen. You know, the Chicago Bulls, the Sacramento Kings, you know, flew up. The Chicago Bulls flew down. So there's always, you know, that chance with the lottery. I think, you know, the number one thing is that, yeah, obviously Corey's right. Yeah, Trae Young ends up being a bust. Kevin Huerter, you know, is injury prone. You know, Amari Spellman doesn't end up being an NBA ready player. You know, he doesn't lose weight. He, you know, he doesn't buy into Lloyd Pierce's system. And, you know, yeah, Travis Schlenk's, all of his moves are. Maybe the worst case scenario is that Luka Doncic becomes Rookie of the Year and Trae Young doesn't even make an all rookie team. There's so many different scenarios that I'm sure Corey will be dreaming about.
We have to have some type of like bet on here that if Trae Young wins Rookie of the Year or he's a bust, it's like Corey has to do something.
He's going to like streak naked somewhere.
I mean, how about this? If he finishes like top five in Rookie of the Year voting,
top five? That's wow.
All right, Jack, let him go. We want to hear what he has to say. We want the
other. I'll say, like, if he finishes top five in Rookie of the Year voting, I have to buy his jersey or something. I don't know. Like, I have to somehow give Trae Young some sort of credit.
We'll say top three to save you, like, to make
the top five, because he's literally a top five pick. So generally, he should have the top. Okay, maybe split the difference. Top four. Let's split the difference.
Okay, top four. And if Corey's nice correct, then he's out of the league in 6 years. Jack and I have to buy you Pacer tickets in 6 years, so you got to remember.
Okay, wait a minute. Let me write this down, all right? Six years.
2000.
Come on.
We'll have to do 6 years from this date, too.
2024.
So 6 years from now, all four of us will get on a podcast, and we'll see where Trey Young's at.
Sounds fun.
I think that he will still be in the NBA. I'm pretty confident in that, but we'll see what happens. Worst case for me, I think, you know, win-wise would probably be 20. I think they'd still be able to manage 20 just with all three-point shooting. But worst case would be Trae Young not being very good and looking like he could bust. You know, John Collins and Prince not taking another step and the player development not really working out. Unsure if Lloyd Pierce is the right guy as the head coach. You know, Travis Lank makes another bad move or something and then the franchise is in disarray, like Justin said, and they have to go rebuild once again. That would be worst case. But what is your actual prediction for the season, guys?
It won 24 games last year, I think, and I think a solid six or seven of them were solely because of Mike Boonholzer. So I think it'd be better to put them around, you know, the 18 to 22 win mark, the NBA. A specific record, I'll put them at 21 and 61.
I'll go 22 and 60.
I don't think I gave my worst record, but I think rolling with it, and they get 19 wins this year.
You predicted that last year. I guarantee if we look back at the pod, you predicted 19.
I think this team is worse than they were last year.
But you predicted the exact same thing last year as well.
No, I think I predicted their worst case scenario to be 19,
then
their actual to be like 23, 24.
Okay.
So I just lowered the bar by five wins.
Fair enough. Well, like Justin was saying, they don't have Mike Budenholzer anymore, and he is worth 5 to 10 wins, however you want to look at it.
Yeah, so there we go. And I have to, like, downsell because I think Trae Young's going to be bad, so, right? I can't go too high because then that's, like, who's scoring all the points for them then.
Yep.
Going to the show, I had 22, but then after talking about them today and hearing all your takes, I think I'm going to go with 20 wins, get a top three pick. But I think the player development will be pretty nice, and I think they'll get some nice use out of players. And I wouldn't be surprised if they pull up a G League guy middle of the year and he turns out to be a rotation piece for them moving forward. Anything else you want to predict any on the Hawks?
I will make a bet of some sort that Trae Young will make an all-rookie team. I think that he is good enough. He is one of the best guards in this class that, you know, unless he gets injured, I think that it's almost fait accompli that he makes an all-rookie team. He's one of the four best guards in this class, which allows him to make an all-rookie team.
Any other takes out there? Or moving on to the next segment.
I'm out.
All right. Moving on to the truth. And if you don't know what this is a segment we've been doing. So every year during the preview, we're going to take a team and we're going to give you an emoji that represents that team. Start us off, Justin.
I'll do one of the new emojis. The one where it's a guy kind of had the finger over his mouth doing the little shh, kind of like flying down. I think that's the kind of vibe that a lot of guys on this team are going for. It's the Hawks. As Mello Fantasy said, nobody wants to play for the Atlanta Hawks. But these guys, they're building something, and even if they're doing under the ropes and they're not going to be talked about as much, they're going to progress, and, you know, they'll do it quietly. And when they do start to be good, whenever it is, it'll be unexpected and be almost kind of like the 60-win team. Going into the fold unexpectedly and then just showing out when they get there.
Yeah, I think you could use that emoji for Corey and all of his takes for this podcast as well. But I'll go with the frowning face with the open mouth, because I think that there could be moments where like a shocking, like, well, why is Trae Young taking that 35-footer? And there could also be some tough times throughout this season. But I think, you know, that emoji could turn into, like, you know, a mild, happy face. You know, if we see some nights, I think it's going to be, there'll be a lot of different emojis throughout this season to describe the Atlanta Hawks. They also have one of the best team Twitter pages, so I'm going to be definitely looking at them and see what they're doing throughout the year.
The emoji for me,
trash emoji or what?
the emoji one is tough for this team. How am I going to?
So he has a laughing face, right? I'm going to be just laughing at all of you who think I'm wrong. And I'm sitting here right, right? So I'm the puppet master. So I'm pulling some strings.
Oh, God.
All right. Mine is just a simple one. It's a construction worker. The Hawks are under construction. They're in the rebuild. They still got a lot of steps to go. It's the early stages. Pretty simple.
I like that.
Yeah, so
Nick's always the king of this emoji game. I remember that's like the first thing I knew as Nick. Like the first thing I thought of when we were like doing these pods, I'm like, damn, his emoji game is strong.
I don't know if that's a positive or negative thing, but
definitely positive in the modern world, Nicholas. Definitely a positive.
I'll take it, Jack. I appreciate it. I'll give a shout out to, because I did not create this segment. This goes back to one of my old co-hosts, Parth Garadia, came up with this around the time where Paul Pierce sent out the picture of the emojis instead of actually tweeting them. I don't know if you guys recall that. But that's where this, and that's why it's called The Truth, because of Paul Pierce. But on to League Pass ratings, rate this team 1 through 10 League Pass wise. Justin, obviously it's a little different because you're, you know, you have more interest in the team, but you feel free to give them as high, as low as you want.
I don't know. Trae Young's a guy that a lot of people like to watch, as is John Collins. So for a league pass, I'll give them a 5. They're not going to be a team you turn into to see how they're doing or to watch good basketball, really. But you're going to tune in because Trae Young's a fun player to watch, and he's a notable player that was a top 5 pick and got a lot of notoriety. And that John Collins, you know, was a guy who was, you know, made an All-NBA team last year, a guy you want to see how he's progressing. And if you watch them in summer league, to keep tuning in to see just how good this guy gets.
Yeah, I think Trae Young alone is just worth a 3. So that's probably basically it. And John Collins, them two combined. You know, if you want to add, Trae Young is worth the 2, and then John Collins is worth a 1. And then, like, you know, Torian Prince is negligible. Corey, just a heads up, though, you can't give negatives in this, mate.
Strictly 1 through 10.
Yeah, I wouldn't give him a negative. Come on, they got to play the Pacers a couple times a year. I'll give him a 1.5.
Oh my god.
I just want to know, obviously,
honestly, why am I watching the Hawks? I mean, there's gonna be a lot of teams where I'm gonna rank low.
Is this gonna be your lowest ranked team of the preview? Obviously, this is our first team, but is there a chance this will be your lowest ranked team?
It'll be close to the Kings. I'll say
Justin's about to hit him with a block after this.
I'll say 2 because John Collins, you know, maybe I'll scoop him up on my fantasy basketball team. You know, I do play FanDuel, so maybe I'll have, you know, a couple of the guys, like Kent Bazemore, just a little bit of everything on the roster. Torian Prince won me some money last year, so maybe like 2.
I think mentioning FanDuel, sorry to cut you off, Jack. I think, you know, you'll watch this team a little bit more because you're going to be picking players against them, because it's going to be a high pace, not a ton of great defense. But for me, sorry, Jack.
I'll go with Justin was saying that. I think that they'll be better than the Orlando Magic. For me, they're my, if I happen to be on that podcast or if I don't, heads up, they would be my lowest league pass rating team.
Yeah, bad guard play always makes a team scary. So that's something for Orlando. I'm going to go with 3.5. I think Trae Young, I'm really interested to see what will happen to him. And I think John Collins, like, he goes out to, like, murder people when he goes up for dunk sometimes. Yeah. So I'm looking for some of those posters. And I've always been a fan of Torian Prince. Like, I like the way he can play, and I think he's a guy that doesn't get enough love. And I always like to kind of watch an eye on the rebuild. So 3.5. What TV show would you watch over the Hawks? Obviously, we all are following the NBA, writing about basketball, podcasting, and whatnot. So we're going to watch basketball. But in a hypothetical situation, what TV show are you watching over the Hawks? Or in Corey's case, what TV show are you watching over the Hawks?
I don't know. I watch a lot of TV, and it's hard to choose. If I'm scrolling and the Hawks are playing some, like the Warriors, and I know nothing good's going to happen, I don't know. Would say The Office, but that's too easy to pick because it's an amazing show. True. I think of like the worst show that I'd watch over a Hawks game. I don't know. You'll have to come back to me on that one.
Yeah, this is probably the toughest question on this for a sec.
Well, I will go with the fact that, you know, I'm always watching the TV show Atlanta over the Atlanta Hawks because Donald Glover is an absolute genius, and that show is one of the best shows of the past half decade. But if we're talking about, like, you know, maybe repeats of shows, like maybe, like, you know, old Entourage or old, like, Louis episodes, or, you know, I think that an Atlanta Hawks game is a bit more exciting than an old Man episode. So maybe like those sort of shows. But yeah, I mean, we love our basketball, and it depends on, like, you know, Corey would probably watch, you know, Teletubbies or Bob the Builder over these things. But I'm excited to hear.
Let's not forget that I'm an NBA lover here, okay? My standards aren't that low.
If I'm scrolling and I see Archer on my TV and it's a bad game, I might just watch Archer for a minute.
Yeah, that's true.
Ooh, see, I like to hear that. That's a good show.
Is it me? All right. The show I would watch over the Hawks. So it's hard because I gotta like save like 28 of these, right?
Yeah, this is it's really difficult towards the end, and you have to pace yourself properly.
It's harder for you guys.
Yeah. So I'm gonna go with Friends. I actually don't like Friends. I liked Friends when I was growing up, and I rewatched it last year, and I realized like how much I'm just not a huge fan of that show. But I would probably watch that over the Hawks.
Number one stream show in the UK, guys. Come on.
Yeah, I feel like Friends is definitely way super overrated. Like, my girlfriend watched it, and I agree with Corey on this one. Yeah. I was going to pick the same one as him, but, you know, I'll switch it up. I'll go with Quantico, a show that I actually kind of liked, but now I don't really like it because it just kind of fell off.
What's that?
It's like with the FBI, and it's like all the trainees, and then all this, like, there's just like a ton of storylines, and it got like too crazy. Just not believable.
Netflix, Amazon.
It's on Netflix. It was on TV. I think it's still on TV. It might have just got canceled though, so that kind of explains a lot.
Yep, makes sense. The Atlanta Hawks won't be canceled as much as Corey wants them to be.
I like that we had the same TV show for the first one, Nick.
All right, guys. Anything else Hawks wise you'd like to get in here before we get out of here?
The Hawks aren't as bad as Corey thinks, and they aren't as good as what the best fan, as the 20-point-per-game Vince Carter fan thinks. They're somewhere around the middle, as much as we all have enjoyed ourselves this podcast.
All right, that wraps it up. And yet, like I said before, you can catch a show on iTunes, Block Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, Google Play, Dash Radio, YouTube. Follow the brand on Twitter at OTGBasketball. Let us know what you think. We'll be dropping previews for the other 29 teams. Big thanks for hopping on, Justin. As always, Jack and Corey, great talking to you.
Of course. Have a good one.
Peace out, knuckleheads.